This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, signature support from the Mayor's Office of East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757 is your number. Robin Dow at the ready. If you dial, once again, 877-217-5757, and emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with one of our favorite guests, and it's been a little while since we've talked with Manuel Martinez. We usually visit with him a couple of times a year, and I think it's been close to a year, and there is a summer of fashion going on amid the heat and the hurricanes, and fashion never goes out of style. And good morning to you, my friend, Manuel Martinez.
Well, good morning, and excited to be here with you this morning. I thank you for having me.
Three times he's been named best in the world at what he does by the World Congress of Tailors, and he's been in business, this is 40 years now, 1984, right?
Yes, I have here been in Baton Rouge that long.
40 years. You've been on Corporate Boulevard for how long?
Since Joe Biden moment here. Since 2019.
Nineteen ninety-nine. You party like it's 1999, like Prince. So 25 years. So there's a couple of significant anniversaries. And you own that shopping strip that you have on Corporate Boulevard. And Manuel is so confident. George Bass is still in there, right?
Yes.
You have a competitor right next door. Well, I love that.
we love competition, and we're glad that he's there with us.
Well, I remember in the heyday of Louis, which continues, but back in the day, you had IHOP right next door, and I think it helped both places. Sometimes competition is a good thing, and I'm glad you appreciate it, and you're not threatened by somebody else who's doing something comparable to you. But when it comes to top-of-the-line clothing, I know Jan Risher came to town, took a shine to you, did a nice story in September of last year, and the headline read, suits start at $4,000. Suits start at $4,000. But I can tell you, and I only have one Manuel Martinez suit, and it's 20 years old, and I'm wearing it today, and which tells you something about the fabric, because I've probably worn this, let's say 10 times a year over 20 years. That's 200 times I've worn this suit. It looks great, and it still fits.
And it still fits. Congratulations to you, and you honor me by wearing a suit that's 20 years old. And the most important about it, when a suit is made proportional right for the individual, you might not be the first horse out of the gate, but you're always in a style. And double breasts are back again.
Really? And so I'm wearing a double-breasted suit. And you look fabulous in blue. He wears colors, Manuel does sometimes, that I could not wear because he has that nice olive skin that goes with his Hispanic heritage. He's a handsome man, and he looks the part from head to toe. And today he's wearing blue, which is usually my color, and you look good in blue too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. But, yeah, color is important, and, it's a my younger days are gone, and my glory days are kind of fading away. But and we all get old. Thank God I'm getting old. You see, I'm lucky. So when you dress with elegance and color, you don't look old.
Well, you've stayed in shape, too.
And, thank you.
And the other night when I saw the debate, we have an old man, some might say feeble, in Joe Biden. He could barely walk to the platform, and then we've got a morbidly obese man in Donald Trump, and they're both, I'm sure, wearing expensive suits, and Joe Biden dresses so well that you have him on your wall of fame. So what did you think of the two presidential aspirants?
Well, there's no doubt Joe dresses very dapper. He dresses younger.
He looks good. He dresses younger.
So the suits are, he's having some suits made, and they're very nicely tailored. On the other hand, Mr. Trump, his suits are not tailored.
They're not made by a tailor. You can tell.
They're ready made. I can tell they're ready made.
They're off the rack,
and they isn't don't fit properly.
The rich man, the billionaire, is wearing suits off the rack, and the poor boy from Delaware is wearing custom made suits. Manuel Martinez or somebody you know well.
Well, I didn't say that they're wearing expensive suits when Mr. Trump is wearing.
Well,
he's wearing an Italian suit.
It's probably a couple of thousand dollars. Probably, I would say, maybe more.
And the north side of that.
North side? Really? Really? Yes, yes. Really? Even though it's off the rack. Well, let's get a figure then. What would it be? $5,000? $5,000.
If I would have to guess,
and it's
yes.
off the rack.
Off the rack.
And he probably thinks that's good. But he's told both Chris Christie and Michael Cohen, who attested to it, that when you're fat, like he is, and like, of course, Chris Christie is, you wear your ties long to cover your girth. Is that really an adequate way to do it?
Well, not necessarily. Maybe that's his signature. You know, some people have a signature, and he does wear the ties.
Well, I don't have any problem with the way the guy looks as far as how his personal appearance. He is certainly, even the hair, he's got a signature and it works for him. Nothing wrong with the way he looks, but he's overweight. That's the problem, and it's hard to cover that up even with a $5,000 suit.
Well, that just goes to show that even if the suit is very expensive and made by the brand, it doesn't necessarily... It means that it's going to fit you properly. So I'd rather have a suit lesser quality that's fit properly and it makes you look like $1 million than have a very expensive suit that doesn't fit right and it makes you look like it's an inexpensive suit.
All right, 877-217-5757. We'll take a call or two from Manuel Martinez, and I've already been implored to have him on more often. He is a true character, a voice that you often don't hear, but we immediately recognizable is Manuel. A couple of things online here. How often do you, New York is still the center of fashion, isn't center of the universe when it comes to fashion. How often do you go ask Holly in the Garden District?
Well, not as often as I used to do. And I go once a quarter, but when we had a showroom there, I was going once a month.
Once a month?
Yeah.
And do you get new ideas?
You know, yes, I do. Every time I go to New York, I sit down with some of my counterparts and look at what somebody else is doing that I might not be doing, and then I incorporate into what we're doing.
John Weston New Road says, fat guys wearing shorts year-round, thoughts, and then adds, that screams of body odor.
I don't have anything against shorts, but I think that sometimes you got to put in your big boy pants when you go out to a restaurant or to a nice place.
Well, what about this senator from Pennsylvania, the Democrat John Fetterman, who's like 6'8". He had a stroke, and so, you know, he gave him a pass when he came back. He was still recovering from his stroke, but he is wearing his trademark hoodie and shorts on the Senate floor. And he's another guy who needs to lose about 100, 150 pounds. That's not working for him, is it?
Well, no, I don't understand why our standards got lowered that much, especially in the Senate or in the House. It should be a sense of civility, and they should still require to wear a suit. I don't understand that.
And here's Tracy at the Capitol saying Bobby Kennedy Jr. is a good-looking man and wears nice suits. Now, you can see he's gotten old. He's 70 years old himself, but he's certainly built like a 747, and he wears nice suits like most Kennedys do. He looks good.
Well, John F. K., he was a very dapper man. He dressed very well.
As was his brother.
And appearance took account. I mean, I don't...
It's now, of course, Teddy was a walrus, but but he still wore expensive suits. 877-217-5757, Patrick in Ennis-Wald Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, quick comment about JFK, and I'll ask my question. There is a picture of him where he has the wrong button on his suit. I thought that was kind of interesting. But I've got a question about leisure suits from the 70s. Do you think they'll ever make the comeback?
And well, Patrick, they already have... But the only difference is that it's not in that polyester fabric that caused the cleaners to almost go out of business. But today they are making what is called a casual work shirt with a pair of trousers out of the same fabric.
Well, a leisure
but
suit.
But they're different. They're
you
different.
Wouldn't wear a leisure suit.
No, you got
a reputation. you got a reputation now.
Hey, I made my mistakes back in the 70s, so I'm not going to make them again.
Well, anyway, there was a story Robin Dow has handed me. This is actually just a few days ago, a story that says, your socks are showing your age. Millennials have cutthroat defenses of their low-cut socks as Gen Z embraces crew socks. As younger consumers have gravitated away from the faux sockless look and toward the 80s and 90s style that emphasized a tall, sometimes even slouchy sock visible far above the sneaker, retailers have felt the shift. So now socks are in style, and socks that go way up the leg. I never liked that look, but I never got used to the no socks look either. I know you frown when you see a man with an expensive suit and a nice pair of shoes and no socks.
If you're no socks, I mean, you got to be careful. If you're wearing a very nice pair of shoes, you're going to ruin those shoes because the perspiration of your feet can't cause damage to that particular shoe.
Still looks unusual to me. But anyway, we'll talk more. Another segment with Manuel Martinez, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, another segment with Manuel Martinez, the man from Mexico who's been in Baton Rouge for 40 years and three times recognized by the World Congress of Tailors as the best tailor in the world. And he is here to talk about what's going on in fashion as he continues to do his thing. A listener noting a show we did not so long ago, about a year ago. You have another place in New Orleans, don't you? You spend a lot of time. You're an usher, the head usher at St. Louis Cathedral, right?
No, the head usher, but I do usher at the cathedral, yeah.
And you have a place on Royal Street, don't you?
Yes, I do, where I see clients from all over the place.
I think Walter Isaacson was your next-door neighbor for a while. Has he moved out?
Yes, he did. He's up in the Garden District because he's teaching at Tulane.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not that far. In fact, it's almost walking. It is walking distance, but not in a Manuel Martinez suit in the heat of July. It's hot out there. It is really hot. What does that do to your clothes over time? I remember you once telling me that people like Sinatra and Dean Martin, who dressed really, really well, they wore out their suits because they were smoking and they had to wash them constantly. But what does heat do to a suit?
Well, I mean, you got to wear the proper clothes. And linen suits or seersuckers, they're ideal if you have to wear a suit. But you're going to be hot regardless. But the linen suits breathe and tend to wick the moisture out of your body. And seersucker suits as well, I mean, they're more comfortable to wear than a heavy wool suit. Now, that is not to say that it's a lightweight garment made out of wool that breathe as well. But you're going to be warm in just about anything you wear.
Well, 877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Manuel Martinez, who continues to have his finger on the pulse of fashion. And we have some good tailors in Baton Rouge. Manuel's here because he's a guy who is a character and loves what he does and says it in ways that nobody else does. And we're glad we have him on our show every now and then. But you have had many clients who are well-known. And Manuel is like a doctor in his patients. He doesn't like to talk about Nick Saban and Les Miles. And I know because he told me John Bell Edwards, who occasionally listens to this show and hears you, he went to you and bought at least one, I think more than one suit. And he looked really good. He looked the part as governor. And Jeff Landry wears a wardrobe that I like, but it reminds me of Kip Holden. Now, if I were governor, I might do the same thing. But does he look a little too much like an entertainer, or is that okay? Because he is a flamboyant fella. It kind of fits his personality. What do you think?
Well, I think that a gentleman with his height should not be wearing plaids. Plaids make them look shorter. He should be wearing solid colors or striped suits that will make it look a little taller. And I also be taken more serious, but I don't think he's got a problem about people taking him serious.
No, he's definitely a guy who's on a mission, but he does like plaid. That is true. That is true. But you're saying if he wore like pinstripes, he would project better.
He would project better. He would look a little taller. And you know, you cannot deny that appearance to make a difference. I don't know if you remember in 2013 Obama wearing that khaki or tan suit. Do you remember there was? It was all over the paper. It was all over the radio, TV. is that he was not being serious enough to address ISIS in some kind of conference with mm-hmm. all the leaders of the world. So people do notice. Yeah, people do notice.
You look like a chief executive, and and a listener asked, "Do you do female?" You do some, but it's most of your clients are male. That's basically what you do. Yeah, yeah. But I think the vice president certainly dresses well, as you would expect. And we've had several first ladies who are quite elegant, and including the one we have now. But Jeff Landry is a bit flamboyant, as was Kip Holden. But it worked well for Kip. He was elected three times.
Kip carried well.
Kip was a neon mayor, wasn't he?
He had that personality. So it was just a magnet of an individual.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Landry has that same kind of magnetism, and I think that the bright colors, but maybe the plaid, the stripes, that's the old story, but it's true. That's why the Yankees wear pinstripes. They wanted to hide Babe Ruth's gut. And your friend Gene Venanzi, isn't that it? The guy from New York who I met and really liked and knew a lot about fashion. He told me he had Al Pacino and Michael Douglas as clients. And he said, which one is taller? And I said, well, Douglas. He goes, no, Pacino's taller. He says, it's because of the clothes I make for Michael Douglas. It makes him look bigger.
Yeah.
And and you're not going to see Michael Douglas in plaid, are you?
But probably not in the movies. I've never seen him wear plaid.
And when I laughed what he wore, he said he wears a 38 regular. I said, not even a 40? He goes, not even a 40. He comes across as a big macho dude on the screen. Now, Robin Dow has handed me another story of recent vintage about one Elvis Aaron Presley. And come January, it'll be 90 years since he was born, January 8th, 1935, in Tupelo, Mississippi. It says, unlike millions of other Americans then and now, Elvis seldom wore jeans. And he was a guy who had a style, as we know, and he liked, according to this story, Cuban collared shirts, wide leg pleated trousers, slip-on loafers, and nice jackets, a style that menswear labels like Prada revisit with clock-like regularity. He was also the king of fashion, wasn't he?
He was, and so that you know, a gentleman from Mexico City who immigrated to Los Angeles, and from Los Angeles, he started making clothes for the actors there, and then went to Nashville, Tennessee, and made clothes for Elvis Presley.
Those outfits he wore on stage were somewhat curious, but they worked for him. And he was the cutting edge, as we know. And this story goes on to say he did things back in the day that were unheard of for a man. He had a nose job. He dyed his hair. But it worked for Elvis. He died at 42, though. And he was another guy who was packing on the pounds, and those tight clothes didn't work as well in 1977 as they did in 1957. So right now, do we make decisions perhaps unconsciously about when somebody comes to a debate, for example, about the way they're dressed? We may not even realize we're making a decision about, like I think Clinton, Reagan, those guys, popular presidents, but also dressed to the nines.
Yes, I think that somebody's advising the presidents or the people in the debates how they should present themselves, how they should look on TV. Maybe they're not listening. I don't know.
But a guy who's, or a girl or a woman running for president probably needs to pick up their game. So some of these people have the resources. As you say, Donald Trump's got the resources to go buy $5,000 suits off the rack. But it's an expensive proposition, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I don't really know if it is or not. You're wearing a suit that is 20 years old or more.
Well, then,
and at that time,
that's right. And imagine if I had two or three of them, I wouldn't need any other clothes.
And at that time, I think we made that suit for around $1,250 or $1,500.
Yeah.
And
well, so now it'd be a $5,000 suit, wouldn't it?
$4,500.
Right. So yeah, and that's the nature of is that Bidenomics?
You probably won't call it that.
Trumponomics. Every president's had inflation, not just Jolt and Joe, but anyway, it does cost more to look good. But But sometimes, as my friend Bottle Line Bob Broadhead said, sometimes you get what you pay for, Jim, in life.
That's
and if you buy an expensive suit, if you go to a quality tailor, whether it's Manuel or somebody else, it's probably going to last longer than the $5,000 suit that Donald Trump bought off the rack.
Yeah, but the most important thing is to have a suit that fits you well. And we are now doing a garment that's called Make the Measure, which is less expensive than the bespoke mm-hmm. garments.
Well, a listener says, Manuel, you must like working in Louisiana because invariably your clients, they get chunkier as, as they get older. So they come back for more and they have to get new new measurements, don't they?
Yeah, well,
I wish you'd brought your tape measure. Next time, will you do that?
I will do that for you, Jim.
Okay. I want to see how I measure up to what the man I was 20 years ago. As Howard Cosell once said to Muhammad Ali, champ, you're not the man you were 5 years ago. And Ali said, Howard Cosell, I'm going to ask your wife if you're the man you were 5 years ago.
He was the greatest. Those
well,
two together.
And Manuel's pretty special, too. Thanks for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to catch up with a man from Tampico, three times named best in the world at what he does, Manuel Martinez.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Jim.
Back after this with Tyler Bridges. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Tyler Bridges is with us, the Pulitzer Prize winning reporter who worked for the Picayune and the Miami Herald, then went away, came back, and he now reports on politics for the Advocate and Picayune, the newspaper of record in Louisiana. Born in Palo Alto, graduated Stanford University, and he was a member of the Stanford Marching Band, which is the subject of one of his books. He is a prolific writer, both of stories about Louisiana politics and has quite a legacy as a writer, and I'm sure there are more books coming from the intrepid Tyler Bridges. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim, and to your listeners, too.
All right. Well, Bad Bet on the Bayou, The Rise of Gambling in Louisiana and the Fall of Governor Edwards, that's one of his books. Another, The Rise of David Duke, and then The Rise and Fall of David Duke. Hard to believe it's been 34 years since Duke ran for the U.S. Senate against Bennett Johnston. 34 years. Tyler, you were there.
Yeah, and then and you were too. And then and it makes it 33 years from that epic 1991 governor's race where it was Buddy Romer, the incumbent, running for re-election, Edwin Edwards trying for a comeback, and David Duke making a name for himself.
Yep, and David Duke, I thought of him on July 1st. I know, as you did, I'm sure, as well. He turned 74 years old a week ago today, and he's been rather quiet of late, rather quiet, but he always, as we say, is looking for an angle. He's a man who's managed to reinvent himself, but I don't think he'll ever be elected to anything in Louisiana again.
No, and you'll remember, Jim, he did win that state house race from Metairie in 1989. I think he won by 227 votes, barely won, and he lost all of his other races. But he did become a national mm-hmm. figure, and as you and I will remember, he got over half the white vote in the 1990 election against Bennett Johnson, and again, over half the white vote in the 1991 runoff against Edwin Edwards.
People sometimes lament the fact that black folks live in Louisiana. There are a few racists around, but without the benevolence and wisdom of black voters, we would have had both Governor Duke and U.S. Senator David Ernest Duke from the great state of Louisiana. He was elected to the House by the skin of his teeth, 227 votes in 1989. And it was Bob Livingston who told me after John Treen lost that race, and I love John Treen. He was a real curmudgeon, he was a character in his own way too, but he said we being Treen and the Republicans had the race won until John started going door to door. John had a menacing aspect to him.
And and give Duke credit for he tapped into anxieties and fears of people in his district, people in Louisiana, in fact, white people throughout the country. In some ways, I think he presaged Donald Trump. Duke was maybe one of the first guys to raise concerns about immigration when he was in the Klan. And he continued to talk about the immigration invasion when he was a candidate for office in Louisiana. And of course, we're seeing Trump has completely taken over that issue these days.
877-217-5757. Well, another guy who's been around for a little while, James Carville, Chester James Carville, who turns 80 in October, is not happy about 81-year-old, soon-to-be 82-year-old Joe Biden being on the ticket as the leader of the Democratic Party, leader of the free world, and a wounded warrior as he seeks re-election against Donald John Trump. Now, Carville said early on, and we were talking a couple of years ago, that Biden needed to call it a career. Today, it's front page story of The Advocate. Your thoughts about James Carville, basically, according to many, being right about Biden seeing better days.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Jim, I have a front page story, and people can read the story online at the Advocate website about James. I write that he's having a moment now because he's a guy who's always quotable, always gets attention, but he's getting extra attention now because, as you mentioned, for a long time he's been saying that Biden is too old to run for re-election.
And you were there at the Essence Festival. Kamala Harris appeared for the third consecutive year. The vice president was questioned for 25 minutes by the CEO of the festival, who did not ask any questions about the elephant in the room, and that's whether she will be the nominee, whether Joe Biden's going to step aside. That was ignored, and that was a disappointment. What were your thoughts about the address that Vice President Harris made in New Orleans at the Essence Festival at the Morial Convention Center?
Right. I was certainly hoping as a reporter that that Kamala Harris would be asked about what was going on now with Joe Biden. I think we could predict what she would say, because she's been saying of late that Joe Biden is the nominee and he and she will defeat Donald Trump this fall. But as the Carville piece indicated, there are people out there and there are growing voices as to whether Joe Biden should be the nominee. Carville flatly predicted to me, Jim, that Biden will not be the nominee, that he will indeed step aside in the coming days.
Well, there are all kinds of scenarios. He could back Harris. He could release his delegates. The Atlantic today had an opinion that I thought might be plausible. That would be that he would release his delegates and still seek renomination and have the delegates decide. Now, most of those delegates are committed to him, but you would think they're political people with lots of knowledge. And there are those who continue to make the case that Biden is the best bet the Democrats have, as wounded as he is. But he was a man who at one time was considered one of the top speakers in American politics, but he is 81, and he's an old 81 based on his speaking ability. Now, his decision-making to this point appears to be fine, but I don't think anybody, Tyler, who saw that debate will come away thinking that he's going to be getting better anytime soon, and we've got another 4.5 years to go before he would finish his second term in office.
Yeah, he would be 86 then. It was interesting with Kamala Harris speaking at the Essence Festival, because black women are the base of the Democratic Party, and those particularly who were the people at the conference. And Kamala Harris got a very strong response, as expected. And we're going to have to see in the coming days exactly what Joe Biden is going to do. But again, James Carville, who's a very, very knowledgeable guy, flatly predicted to me that Joe Biden will indeed step aside.
877-217-5757. Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. You're on with Tyler Bridges. Good morning, Henry.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Tyler. Mr. Tyler, it's not often that I disagree with you, but I guess I got a little bit of a bone to pick. I saw that piece that you did a couple weeks ago where you featured a local hate radio guy in your column, or not in your column, front page. And I just think that you're a better reporter than that. We're better. I don't know if they picked that story out and told you to do the story or what.
All right, but that's about Moon Griffon, and it's a legitimate story. Moon has influence in Louisiana politics, and that's what the story was about. And I didn't think it was a puff piece either. But Tyler, as you know, in this business, as much as we love Henry, sometimes you can't please everybody.
No, and to Henry's question, I chose that story idea. And in fact, most of what I write is what I choose to write. I have a lot of freedom. You know, my story has to go through an editor. But I thought that Moon Griffon is the most influential conservative talk radio host in Louisiana. Of course, Jim, you have an enormous impact yourself, but you speak to in a different way, and I think probably have a different audience than what Moon Griffon does. But I think readers should be knowing who he is, whether they like what he has to say or not.
Well, 26 years ago, when our show went statewide as Louisiana Live, Moon followed about a year later with his show. Now, he had been on the air in Monroe for a while, but he went statewide as well. And many stations carried at that time me in the afternoon and him in the morning. And I remember George Harrison of KVCL in Winfield. He said, I've got a guy in the morning who's from Arkansas who sounds like he's from the big city, and a guy in the afternoon from the big city who sounds like he's from Arkansas. Moon is from Plaquemine. That's the big city, isn't it? And he's a guy, like many people, who is a much different personality off the air than he is on. Very charming man, but I give him credit for resilience. It's not an easy path he took, and he decided to do this with his life, and God bless him. He's been successful, Tyler.
Yeah, you know, I think Jim, compared to you, he's much more of an entertainer. He likes to insult people. That's not your style. I think you're focused on getting the information out there, letting people speak. We're all in the marketplace of ideas, right? And he's got his style and his audience, and you have your style and your audience. And I'm thankful that you're still out there doing your stuff, Jim, because obviously a lot of people like to listen to you.
Well, thank you. James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Tyler. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Tyler. Surprising, nothing should be a surprise these days, I guess, but I did Google David Duke this morning, ran across this article of about 2 weeks ago on ABC News. Hold on to everything. The headline is, David Duke's godson is now anti-racist activist and an openly transgender person. You can look it up. Transgender is very confusing. I think this, this Don Black was the name, and now Don Black is a transgender activist.
Wait a minute. Don Black was an associate of Duke, so this is his godson, right? And Don, also Don Black. Don Black married Duke's ex-wife, didn't he, Tyler?
Yeah, I can straighten this out. James is correct about David Duke. His godson has indeed come out as a transgender. His name is Derek Black, because I had lunch with Derek a number of years ago. He is the son of Don Black and also the son of David Duke's ex-wife as well.
Chloe.
So, Chloe. So, and Derek Black has written a new book, too.
All right. We'll talk more with Tyler Bridges when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Tyler Bridges. Reporting about Louisiana politics for The Advocate and Picayune, 877-217-5757. A few matters for Tyler. Today's 6 months since Jeff Landry took the oath of office as governor. It's been an eventful half year, has it not, Tyler Bridges?
Yeah, Jeff Landry took office, as you remember, having won the primary, and now he has a Republican supermajority in the legislature. After 8 years of John Bel Edwards, the Democrat, there's certainly pent-up demand to make changes, and certainly Jeff Landry has made some major changes, new map for Congress, new map for the Supreme Court, primary elections, close primary elections, although independents can participate. Certainly during his anti-crime session, he got through, I think it was 20 different bills, to get tough on crime, although ironically, Jim, as you know, crime is already coming down in New Orleans and throughout the state. During the regular session, the governor seemed more interested in grabbing more power, even though the governor has considerable power in Louisiana. And that's one story I was writing about last week, was he is maneuvering to have a friend, Justice Jimmy Genovese, member of the Louisiana Supreme Court, become the next president of Northwestern State University. And his new appointee is the chair of the Louisiana University of Louisiana system, is helping carry forth that change as well.
Well, one of my mentors from college, Jules Demicourt, said, those who have power use power. And Jeff Landry is not reluctant to use the awesome power of the Louisiana governor's office. In fact, Tyler, it's fair to say, I think, that he wants to even make the office more powerful.
Oh, he does, absolutely. Again, after 8 years of John Bel Edwards, Jeff Landry wants to make change in Louisiana. He thinks that's what the voters of the state want. And so it's going to be an interesting time going forward. You know, next week, the Republicans hold their national convention. Governor Landry told me that he might be on the speaking there, and he recently spoke before the Tennessee Republican Party. So I think there will be some speculation as to what might happen for Jeff Landry if Donald Trump indeed wins the presidency.
Craig in Natchitoches, please be brief. Craig, you're on the air with Tyler Bridges. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Tyler, first off, I have your book, Long Shot, and really enjoyed it. And I was wondering, one, could you have a ballpark figures on how many copies of that book have sold? And the other question is, regards to the caller talking about Moon Graffon, I lost respect for Moon Graffon when he just went so far to the right after John Bel Edwards upset his beloved David Vitter. And y'all can comment on that.
All right. All right, Tyler. By the way, books generally don't sell in the hundreds of thousands. But if you sell, for example, 10,000 copies, you've got a hit. Tyler, I don't know, but I suspect Longshot's probably in that realm, and which would make it a book that was bought, which you always want. But more importantly, I think it's a book that will withstand the time, and it'll be viewed as really the best perspective of what happened in what was an historic election of 2015.
Yeah, Jeremy Alford and I did the book, Long Shot. We're not quite yet at 10,000 sales, but if anybody wants one, they can order one from me directly at tylerbridges.com, because to order a book on the web is much more expensive, but they can order a book for me at tylerbridges.com, and I'll sign it. But yeah, Jeremy and I do take the reader behind the scenes and tell, I think, a great classic Louisiana story of how John Bel Edwards was able to pull off that amazing victory. But I think we did a really nice job, and Jeremy deserves credit for telling Jay Darden's story, David Vitter's story, Scott Angell's story, and along with John Bel Edwards' story also. But clearly, times are different right now, and Moon Graffon has jumped on to the Trump train. He's distanced himself a little bit on some issues lately with Jeff Landry, which was what I focused on in the profile that I wrote on Moon Graffon. As I said earlier, Moon likes to insult people that he doesn't like. And Jim, I've never heard you insult anybody on the air.
Well, some would differ with that, but not as overt as Moon, who called my friend and frequent guest Foster Campbell Bananas Foster, and Foster's response was to call him right back, Moon Pie, Moon Pie, Moon Pie, and Moon didn't like that a lot. Gretchen in St. Francisville. Gretchen, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. This is a very quick statement about the presidential election. The statement by Bernie Sanders yesterday, I thought, was very astute. And if you can pull that up, thank you.
All right. Well, Bernie is older than Biden. And there's an example. He's had open-heart surgery, and he's a bundle of energy, and shows no signs of slowing down. It doesn't take him a half minute to walk to the stage. But Biden is not anything close to what he was even 4 years ago, Tyler, and that has to be cause for concern. And optics, particularly in the television age, I don't think Roosevelt would have been elected if he had been on television in 1950, which of course was 5 years after Roosevelt died. There were only 6 million television sets in the whole country. But now we see people, and when we see them in a diminished state, and we can remember Joe Biden of yesteryear, it is somewhat concerning, even for those who are supportive of him.
Yeah, I think even in the interview he did with George Stephanopoulos on Friday, his voice just is not as strong and powerful. And whether a Biden supporter likes that or not, as you say, that image, that does matter. People want their leader to project strength, and certainly Donald Trump projected a lot of strength during the debate with Biden. Now, it seemed like Trump said a lot of things that are simply not true and made all sorts of wild statements, but he did say it in a very forceful way.
I did see one observer note that Donald Trump had the second worst performance in debate history as far as presidential debates, but unfortunately for Joe Biden supporters, Joe Biden had the worst performance in the history of debates. And I can't imagine him doing that much better on September 10th if that debate goes forward. And there are those who say Donald Trump won't debate him again. I think he will debate him again because he feels like he has an advantage over him. And the advantage, if anything, is about optics and about vocal power, things that have nothing to do with performance, because Biden, on the whole, I think if historians rank him as they will, he will be among the top 15 presidents of all time if he stops now. But the most dangerous thing, according to some, would be for him to be reelected and be incapacitated. That would not be good for him or the country.
Yeah, and I covered Kamala Harris on Saturday in New Orleans at the Essence Festival, and she took questions for 25 minutes. She was very relaxed. No one had any trouble understanding what she had to say or what the points that she was trying to make. And so it was a clear difference between her and the president.
Well, thank you, Tyler. We'll catch up again soon. And some listeners, it's amazing how many emails I got about David Duke. He's the gift that keeps on giving because people are still fascinated with that guy for whatever reason. But thank you, Tyler. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. Now we are in the midst of a special week for the Louisiana Art Music Collective, the inaugural performance Saturday the 13th at 3:30 p.m., pre-concert talk, followed by the concert at 4 o'clock, and it is something that will take place in our community, 250 North Boulevard, and with us to talk about it is a young performer who has done Baton Rouge and LSU proud, Lauren Smith. She's an oboist and conductor pursuing a master's degree in performance and literature at the world-famous Eastman School of Music, studying with Dr. Richard Kilmer. And she is a graduate of Louisiana State University, which has one of the great programs in the country. And Donna Britt, the great, great anchorwoman, was an oboist like you. But Lauren, congratulations on your rise to exceptional acclaim. And tell us about what's going to happen this weekend in your hometown.
Yes, thank you so much. So recently we started the Louisiana Art Music Collective, and we're a group of young professional musicians with a lot of energy, eager to engage with the community and just share the music that we love and the music that we study.
Well, I mentioned the address, 250 North Boulevard. That's the River Sitter Branch Library, the beautiful new library right downtown.
Yes.
So that's where you go, and there will be selections by Mozart, mm-hmm. among others. Tell us about what we will hear.
Absolutely. So you'll hear the Mozart Serenade for Winds in C minor, as well as the Antonin Dvorak Serenade in D minor. These pieces were written around 100 years apart, but they use similar instrumentation, meaning sets of instruments, and it should be a really fun concert. I think it'll be good music for people to hear.
How did you get involved in music?
So it all started in band for me, fifth grade at Episcopal. I graduated from there in 2019. I had a great band director, Mr. Paul Taranto, began on clarinet, moved to oboe.
He did Evangeline, I remember, Paul Taranto.
Yeah, that's right.
So you must be like 23?
Yeah.
23 years old, and
yes.
The whole world ahead of you. You're at a great place for music, and they produced a lot of famous people, including Al Hurd, I believe. He went to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, not far away. But anyway, what's your future plan?
Yeah, so in the future, you know, I'd like to continue my pursuits with the oboe. as well as with conducting. But hopefully this project will be something that's ongoing and we're able to continue to contribute to the community through music.
Well, we look forward to many visits with Lauren Smith. Again, Saturday, 3:30 at the River Center Branch Library. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.